Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's December the 7th, 2005. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. Kay Whitlock is away today. Later this half hour in Hurstead, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons, not here in Champaign County, but rather from Delphi, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along, too, that in a moment, with all the day's agricultural news, including a story on a business meeting in Washington today to reauthorize the CFTC, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, we'll take a look at the Illinois milk industry and profit prospects for the first quarter of 2006. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The December wheat at 297 and a quarter, up rather down 2.5 cents for the day. March contract down 2.5 as well. It settled at 313 and a quarter. December wheat at the Kansas City Board of Trade at 362 today, off a penny. From the Chicago Board of Trade corn pit, December futures at $1.87 finished down 3.75 today. The March futures were 3.25 lower at 201, and the May contract at 209.5 down 3.5 cents. December corn down 2.25 at 238 and 1/4 for the day. Soy complex now, January beans 559. They were off a nickel for the day. The March contract at 567.5 down 3.5 cents, and the May futures off 4.5 at 571.25. November beans for the day at 584 down 3 cents. December bean meal 173.60 down 150. December bean oil off a nickel at $21 even, and the feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange were up 37.5 cents at 115.70. Live cattle at 92.75 were up 2.5 cents, and December lean hogs up 2.5 at 62.67 1/2.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Hi, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. Nice to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you. I hear you and Dave Dickey and the Extension folks from Purdue and the U of I had a really great meeting yesterday in Lafayette. I wanted to send you too far away, and at the Beef House there in Covington, Indiana.
You know, the Bi-State group did a beautiful job. They had a lot of different subject matter. We had a wonderful meal from Bob Wright there, and we just had a lot of fun, had a lot of nice conversation about, you know, WILL, the markets, and agriculture, and I think everything is great at Covington, Indiana.
Did you guys come up with any conclusions about which way the marketplace is headed for corn and soybeans?
Well, you know, there was a lot of good topics. You know, one of the topics we talked about was commodity hedge funds, and we basically came across with the idea or the conclusion that it was a profitable year, 2005, for the hedge funds. Maybe not so much in the corn, wheat, and soybean positions, but when you go into crude oil, gold, and silver, cattle, it probably added up to the bottom line that they made a nice profit. We talked a little bit about the corn and soybean acreage, and there's still a general opinion is the verdict is still out just how big a swing we're going to see in acreage this coming year. There's a general feeling, though, it's pretty steady. But with the larger wheat acres and high costs, there is definitely going to be some acreage reduction in corn. As far as putting the crop away, we talked about that, and, you know, need to have a little better transportation system out there to move corn and soybeans to market. We did talk a little bit about the ethanol, but I think the big factor here is that when we left there, that prices are very cheap today, and hopefully we will see something come across like maybe smaller corn acreage to help support that commodity.
Let's talk about the soy complex just a bit. Finished in nickel down in the nearby January at 559. The March contract at 567.5. They were off 3.5 cents, but doesn't really reflect how far that market went down today. Down about 15 cents in the nearby contract. The rebound give you some good thoughts about what might be coming in for this marketplace?
Well, you know, one of the things that we think the bird flu is basically being put to bed. When we had the big hurricane, and statistics verify this, that we basically couldn't ship beans out of the country right at harvest time, and basically the exporters shifted the demand to South America. They shipped an extra 3 million metric tons of soybeans out of South America to China. China was concerned about where they were going to get their soybeans, and they raised their arm and bid for them and bought about 3 million metric tons of soybeans. That's about what our exports are lagging behind. And this morning, the Canadian government issued a very large production estimate on wheat and canola. And, of course, that basically set the tone, with the tone being whispered that we're going to see increased stocks in the world on corn and soybeans. And the corn, soybean, and wheat market had to struggle all day today just with that. And, you know, historically, with cold weather, that keeps something strong, but today it was downer.
And tell me about the close of the market today, and because I only know this because the settlement prices were wrong at the end of the day, and what we got were higher highs than actually the high, and we had those for the settlements. But somewhere along the line, this must have been pretty strong at the end of the day. Is that right?
Yeah, we did see a strong rally coming back late in the day. And two, about three things that we can associate that with the soybean market. We know that South America is basically sold out of that commodity, soybeans. Number two, the farmer's not selling beans in a very big fashion. And number three, the soybean basis levels in the U.S. are improving. That all adds up to, you know, hopefully demand starting to perk up. The war cry of $5 beans being basically talked about by a lot of think tank marketing services. But at the present time is that there's a long time down the road. Soybean oil still, particularly next year, is going to be an energy commodity, and the marketplace isn't ready to go to $5 a bushel, and it's basically in a nice trading range at the time, and we did see a comeback late in the trading day.
Tell me about this, more about the 3 million metric tons that were shy and that Brazil apparently picked up. Because all in all, I suppose that could be picked up fairly quickly. 3 million metric tons is a little more than a million bushels, like 1.1.
Well, I think that's over 100 million bushels, and you see we're behind in our shipping about 85 million bushels. And so the Chinese basically bought this bought beans out of South America that farmer was holding, and also probably hedge positions by the large international grain exporting companies. You know, the Chinese heard reports that the transportation system to the Gulf was basically shut down, both rail and barge. Some big elevators were put out of commission. And right at soybean harvest, they were expecting to buy some U.S. origin beans, both the Gulf and West Coast. And as a result of that, there was major shifting of hedge positions and export sales from the U.S. to South America. Their cupboard is empty, and that's the reason why I don't think it's such a bearish deal. And I think that maybe the slowdown in exports isn't really a real reflection on the true economic situation in the soybean complex.
I forgot to add in a zero to my addition. I was using 37,000 instead of 37 million bushels for a metric.
We'll forgive you today, Todd, because
you've
been busy all week, I know.
It has been a busy week, in fact. All right, let's talk a little bit about this corn market. Down in those, near the bottom of the range, almost all the way down to the December contract low today.
Corn, you know, one of the things that Dr. Urich mentioned to me, he said, don't forget to tell them out there that, you know, when prices are cheap, there's a carry in the marketplace, and there is better prices when you sell May and June and July corn. And, yes, that's right. And, of course, another way to play the game is you write out-of-the-money calls to help make that carry possible. one of the things that it's going to take time for us to work our way out of this mountain of corn, but one of the things that we hope does happen is that we keep emphasizing, you know, corn acreage reduction. I think Chuck Shelby says, you know, he thinks the verdict's still out on that and on just the size of it because of the cost, the sheer cost of putting that crop in. We know that the wheat acreage is going to be larger. Ag Resources is basically saying that there could be, what, 3 million acres, close to 3 million acres of wheat planted here in the state of Illinois. That's a million acres more than a year ago. I don't think it's quite that high, but when we add it up, there has been some shift. The big factor we also mentioned, too, is it does cost a lot to irrigate corn. It's dry in the west, and, of course, some of that irrigated corn center pivots in Kansas and Nebraska, some of that ground could go to wheat and other commodities.
Interesting on the acreage figure, Tim Young, who was on Commodity Week last weekend from Vincennes, Indiana, telling us he thought that there could be as much as 15% of the acreage shifted to wheat this past fall. We'll find out more about that, I suppose, in January when the wheat numbers come out. John Bondurant on a couple of weeks ago on Commodity Week talking about 5 million acre shift. And I think Chuck is in that 3 to 4 million acres area along with the folks from Ag Resource. Where do you stand, Paul?
You know, I think it's a monumental shift. We do see, you know, the Informa Group's 1.5 million acres. You know, I think that there is that chance of, 2 million acres and economics at planting time. One of the other things, I was in Iowa over Thanksgiving. The big war cry there is, you know, we've had about 10 or 11 bin buster years almost in a row. It could be a wet spring. And don't forget, the statistics go in the favor of having a problem after you've had a stretch of so many good years. So, they're geared to plant corn, and, of course, sometimes in real stressful situations, that backfires on you.
Anything on the grain and soybean ending stocks or the mercantile exchange before I let you go?
Well, I think that the carryover is going to inch up both on corn and soybeans, but we've fought bigger battles, and I think we are very, very cheap.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's forecast for tonight says increasing cloudiness, lows ranging below to below zero in northwestern Illinois to 22 in the far south. Tomorrow, cloudy skies, snow spreading in from the west to the east with a steadiest snow during the afternoon and evening. Highs tomorrow from 15 in northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. By the way, a snow advisory is in effect for much of southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana for Thursday. A winter storm watch in effect for the rest of southern Indiana and much of central Indiana from Thursday afternoon into late Thursday night. Dave Dickey will be here in just a few moments to take a look at the agricultural news for the day.
In agricultural news, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte, a Republican from Virginia, is holding a business meeting this afternoon to allow panel members to begin considering a bill that would reauthorize the operations of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The law controlling the CFTC must be reauthorized every few years, and it is during this process that Congress can tweak some of the commission's operating procedures. South Korea's 17-member Livestock Quarantine Committee is scheduled to meet next week to discuss safety issues regarding U.S. beef. The panel failed to reach an agreement on November 29th and postponed its decision for 2 weeks. But even if the committee gives the go-ahead on resumption of U.S. beef trade, it will be some time before shipments arrive in South Korea. The main reason, the two nations would have to negotiate details on import conditions and assurances of the safety of U.S. beef. Meanwhile, USDA officials met with visiting Japanese government officials yesterday to prepare for the resumption of U.S. beef exports to Japan. One Japanese official says Japan's Food Safety Commission could issue its final ruling on the safety of U.S. beef as early as tomorrow, with the Japanese government issuing its ruling on Monday. USDA Secretary Mike Johans says there's now light at the end of the tunnel.
We're at a point where I can tell you I believe it's paying off and soon to pay off. That work with the Japanese government and painstaking at times, and you saw my comments, painstakingly slow, I really do think that the end is in sight here.
Japan banned U.S. beef in December of 2003. Other Japanese delegations to the U.S. are also expected to discuss technical issues such as USDA's beef export verification program to assure U.S. beef will meet Japanese safety demands. Up to 10,000 demonstrators are expected at next week's World Trade Organization talks in Hong Kong. Three major marches are planned throughout the week to highlight complaints with world trade issues. Meanwhile, an international trade expert does not think next week's meeting will break the stalemate in world trade talks. Stuart Doan of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting reports from the U.S. Rice Outlook Conference in Austin.
Paul Drazik told the USA Rice Outlook Conference while the U.S. farm subsidy and tariff cutting proposal stimulated the negotiating process, the key sticking point remains the European Union's refusal to open its markets.
And the reason that that's important is if the Europeans refuse, then all the rest of the world will simply do no more than what the Europeans are prepared to do, and we won't get anything. And if that happens, then there shouldn't be an agreement. Then we should say goodbye.
Drazik said a WTO deal will have to be finalized by September to gain U.S. congressional approval before trade negotiating authority expires in July 2007. Stuart Doan, Austin.
Barge freight rates are on the rise again on the Mississippi River due to the onset of winter. Monday saw a 50-cent rise in basis points for delivery to docks on the mid-Mississippi. Spot barge freight rates currently stand at 425% of historical par value on the mid-Mississippi. A provision of the Bioterrorism Act, which goes into effect on Friday, will require large grain, feed, and food companies to keep detailed, easy-to-access records on their suppliers and shippers. The record-keeping regulation is expected to help the Food and Drug Administration track potential sources of food contamination and to manage the commingling of grain and feed ingredients used for food and animal feed. And Mexico says it will appeal a WTO ruling that says it has violated global trade rules in a soft drink dispute with the U.S. At issue is a 20% tax that Mexico imposed on beverages made with imported sweeteners. Drinks made with Mexican cane sugar are exempt from the tax. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, up next, a dairy specialist at the U of I is predicting the new year may not be a profitable one for milk producers. Dairy producers in the United States may take a pay cut at the beginning of the year, says University of Illinois dairy specialist Mike Hutchins. He expects the price of fluid milk will drop by about $2 a hundredweight in January.
So it's kind of like someone who's working out, they're going to take a 20, 25% pay cut. Why is that happening? Basically because we have extra milk in our country right now. We're up about 3% in milk, and that's more milk than we can drink or eat as cheese and butter here in the United States. And our exports are very difficult because we're not the low-cost producers. So certainly farmers have to be aware of that. The good news, consumers are starting to see some of that benefit as well. As milk prices have dropped on the consumer shelf 3 to 4 to 5%, and that trend should continue as well.
There is a dairy farmer-owned program working to limit the amount of milk available in the U.S., and that's supposed to hold the prices higher. It's called CWT. That stands for Cooperatives Working Together, and the initials are a play on the abbreviation for hundredweight, or the unit by which milk is sold as a commodity. Mike Hutchins says it works this way. Dairy farmers pay into a common fund, and that fund is used to retire dairy cows.
We've just finished the third round of this, and it looks like we will harvest about 40 to 45,000 cows, trying to reduce the milk volume, trying to maintain milk prices at a competitive edge for our dairy farmers.
The CWT program began in July of 2003. Its members invest 5 cents for every 100 weight of milk they sell. The goal is to reduce the nation's milk supply by 1.85 billion pounds. The organization forecasts its efforts added about $1 billion to farm income this year. It estimates the milk supply in the United States has been curbed by 1.7 billion pounds. You can learn more about the CWT effort by visiting their website at www.cwt.coop. C-O-O-P. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580 Urbana, Illinois. We're joined now by Mike Anderson of the Andersons in Delphi, Indiana. Thanks for filling in for Kay Whitlock this afternoon, Mike. We appreciate it a great deal.
Yep, you're welcome.
Tell me about the marketplace there in your area and how the farmers are or are not moving cash, corn and soybeans.
Well, it does feel like in our marketplace that both corn and beans are getting moved. The basis, especially bean basis, feels like it's firming up. It was real low during the harvest just because space was tight and lots of beans were coming in, but got better for a little while, but it feels like the processors and a lot of the end users are feeling that they're getting what they're needing, so the basis is feeling like it's firming up a little.
And how has it changed over the last week and a half?
Oh, I mean, inbound receipts here at the elevator have slowed down, and a lot of the more country elevators, but the processors, like I said, it feels like they're getting what they need to be getting, so they're not feeling the pinch, I guess.
Discussion in the Delphi area about next year's planting season and whether there'll be a shift or was a shift to some wheat acres, possibly to more soybeans next spring.
Lots of talk about that, and I haven't heard a whole lot of, I guess, necessarily facts to support that. I know up north, a few of the seed guys say that they've sold a lot more wheat than they have corn. Like I said, in our immediate area here and right around the Delphi elevator, I haven't heard too much about that.
And there at Delphi, where do you ship to?
Well, we'll do a lot of direct ship down into Lafayette and Frankfort, and then we'll ship a lot of unit trains down to the southeast.
Any problem again for transportation?
Not right now. There was during harvest, but, I mean, everyone was looking for a train, and there was only so much to go around, but now the pressure's off for us, so we can get a train pretty much at will now.
And your bids for the day, if you have those available?
Sure do. $1.81 for corn this evening, $5.42 for beans, and $2.73 to spot out any DP wheat that anyone would have.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
You're welcome.
Mike Anderson of the Andersons there in Delphi, Indiana, joining us on this Wednesday afternoon. He's filling in, of course, for our regular Wednesday afternoon cash grain analyst, Kay Whitlock. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with meteorologist Drew Lerner about the weather. Your local newscast comes up next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. The Savoy Village Board will show up as a group tonight at a meeting of the Unit 4 School Board's Facilities Committee. Board members want to lobby the committee for a new school. The committee is considering the need for new school buildings district-wide. Savoy is in the Unit 4 district, but currently has no schools located in the village. A Village Board member, Joan Dykstra, says the Savoy area needs its own school, especially considering the village's rapid growth in recent years. After months of heated debate, the Chicago City Council voted 45-1 today to pass a smoking ban. The compromise measure would ban smoking in virtually all indoor public places in Chicago, but taverns and restaurant bars would have 2.5 years to comply. The ban applies to restaurants, stadiums, taxicabs, shopping malls, and other areas. The ban goes into effect January 16th. State Senator Steve Rauschenberger has dropped out of the Illinois governor's race to run for lieutenant governor as the running mate for former State Board of Education Chairman Ron Gidwitz. The move combines Gidwitz's personal fortune with Rauschenberger's appeal to conservatives. Together, they could present a strong challenge to the GOP frontrunner, State Treasurer Judy Barr Topinka. But the Topinka campaign predicts the new partnership will have no impact. They argue it's a team of two candidates who have failed to catch fire with voters. Authorities say two central Indiana sheriff's deputies wounded today in separate shootings are expected to recover from their wounds. A Marion County deputy was shot today by a suspected bank robber, and a Johnson County deputy was shot following a police chase. Volumes of a 1920s tabloid newspaper that first exposed the baseball's Black Sox scandal have resurfaced at the University of Illinois Library the day after they disappeared. Library staff says it appears someone returned the issues of Collier's Eye to a public area of the reference library where they could be easily found. Collier's Eye was the first to report on the Black Sox scandal, in which some Chicago White Sox players were charged with throwing games. Staff members had reported the tabloids missing from the library's stacks last night. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
I'm Ted Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to The Information Advantage. This is WILL Urbana. It's a broadcasting service of the College of Communications here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Well, we're unable to contact Drew Lerner this afternoon to talk about the agricultural weather. We do have Ed Kieser's own two-state forecast to take a look at. It says a snow advisory is in effect for much of southern Illinois and southwestern Indiana for Thursday. A winter storm watch is in effect for the rest of southern Indiana and much of central Indiana from Thursday afternoon into late Thursday night. And Ed was in just a moment ago and tells me that he thinks, and I'm not quite certain about this, that Indiana's eastern side will be, eastern Indiana, all of it will be under heavy snow warnings sometime in the near future. So keep an eye out for that. Now, here's the forecast across the two-state region from Ed tonight. He says increasing cloudiness. Lows will range from 2 below zero in northwestern Illinois to 22 in the far south tomorrow. Cloudy, some snow spreading in from the west to the east with the steadiest snow during the afternoon and evening. Highs will range from 51 in northwestern Illinois to 32 in the far south. In fact, Ed Kieser joining us in studio now to take a look at the weather. Hi, Ed.
Hi, I heard you reading my forecast, so I thought I'd come in and just give you a little update. We do have a potent weather system coming in, and the National Weather Service usually puts forecasts out between now and the next hour from now, and we'll be updating advisories. And as you noted, parts of eastern Indiana have just been put into a heavy snow warning. That goes into effect 1 p.m. tomorrow eastern time and goes through 4 a.m. on Friday morning. So some places out that way could get over 6 inches of snow. I'm thinking right now about 4 to 6 inches in the Champaign-Urbana area. Lesser amounts as you go west, bit heavier as you go east. So by late tomorrow and tomorrow night, much of eastern Illinois and all of Indiana will be getting into some snow.
I seem to recall several years ago we had a contest here in the station asking from you when the first average 1-inch snowfall came in Champaign, Illinois. Do you know the answer? I do.
Well, I heard you mention December 18th last week. I actually think it's a little earlier than that, but the contest used to be guessing the date of the first 1-inch snowfall, and this year we've had that already. That was December 1st. We hit it on December 1st this year. Snowfall statistics, though, I should point out, the averages aren't really that good to look at because that's all they are. There's a wide variety, a high standard deviation if you want to play the statistics game with snowfall. Some years there's very little, but a few big years up the averages. And the same thing with the first snowfall, anywhere from late October into January. So we were a little ahead of schedule this year, but it wasn't very unusual.
No, it looks like we're going to get plenty more and very soon.
This will probably be the biggest snowfall here in at least a couple of years. We have not had any really big snows the last couple of years.
Ed, we appreciate you dropping in on us.
My pleasure.
Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist here at WILL's radio stations, joining us this afternoon to take a look at the local weather forecast across the two-state region. I'm Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on WILL AM 580. Don't forget to join us again tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first look at the marketplace. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis, the cash grain analysis, and the weather right there on our website. Just go to will.uiuc.edu, click on AM, and then naturally, agriculture. I'm Todd Gleason.